should get Tahir RBG to start off with a freestyle before we bring our guests on.
Hey, WHPB 98.5 The Wire. We on fire. Every time we do it like this, on the drop of a dime, we're rapping over this smooth beat, and that's how we do it. We play nothing but the good music. You know you got used to it. And now it's time for the boys to do it. We about to interview my brother right here. See what's going down in Leon County real clear. We about to do the thing. You know we real sly. On 98.5.
That's why he's still getting royalties, family.
I was expecting that.
From Dead Prayers to Roots.
I just
on the spot.
That's beautiful. The OG say pull it out the bag. I reached in my bag, see what was in.
Better you than me. Better you than me.
In the building, State Senator Randolph Bracey. Welcome to the show, sir. How you doing today?
I'm good. I must say that was impressive.
Oh, you never had a welcome like that, right?
No, I don't usually get freestyles before I get on the radio. This is new, but I like it.
This is Pine Hills business.
Yeah, this is us over here. This is family over here.
We be doing what we want to do. The other station got to do what they tell them to do. You know what I'm talking about?
Independent.
That's there you right. Go. Hey, so welcome to the show. I know you're going. When do you go back in the session?
So we go back in January at the beginning of the year. So what we have is what we call our committee week process, where we start to vet certain proposals, and then our actual session is from January to the beginning of March, so 2 months.
Okay, so yeah. What are y'all considering this upcoming session?
Well, every legislator has the opportunity to put forth proposals. Mine usually deals around the criminal justice space. You know, I think we have to reform our system, and so I've been a leader in that area, and so I've got a number of proposals. But from the general, you know, sense of it, you've got a lot of things. I mean, you got education proposals. You've got, Amendment 4, which I think they'll come back and try to look at changing that.
Again?
Yeah. I mean, because there is loopholes where that Miami-Dade is using to still register felons. So after it went to the constitutional amendment and passed, you had Tallahassee who looked at it and said, we aren't really going to let all these felons vote. And the leadership is Republican in the House, the Senate, and the governor's mansion. So they decided that they're going to limit the power of Amendment 4 by implementing language, just laws that limit its power. And so they did that, but then there are still some loopholes that they missed. So I think they're going to come back.
Wow.
You know, the elections were so close with Gillum and the U.S. Senate that they looked at it and like, you know, if felons vote in mass, then outcome will be different.
It'll be different. Yeah.
They know that. Removing a lot of that.
So far, there has been a lot of ex-felons who have registered, though, right?
They have. But, you know, it's still up to the Department of State, Secretary of State, to make the final determination. So even though they're registered, they make the final call.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
So what are we at right now? Are ex-felons being allowed to vote if they're paid their fines?
Yes. If they pay their fines, yes, they can vote.
Is there a lot of them who still have fines?
I don't have the exact numbers yet. I would say most people do had fines. But there's a group that is organizing that is trying to pay fines.
Okay.
You know, Desmond Mead is at the forefront of that.
Wow.
And so he's doing a great job. No, I mean they're doing a great job in raising money for it. Wow. And so I forgot how he told me, but he said the number of people that owe fines, the percentage is mostly white. Because they have like white collar crimes where they owe millions of dollars. Where if you look at the average person of color, you know, they may owe like $300 something. Like that's the average. So when you look at it in its totality, it's really not that much. And so if you're able to raise a lot of money that he has those connections, then you could put a dent in those fines.
And then they're going to come back and try to close. They're going to kind of try to find something else.
Absolutely.
What else is it for them to find?
Look, man, if you look at the, no, I mean, it's kind of sad, but if you look at the history of this state. I mean, it's something that they've always been doing since the very beginning of the Constitution, because after slavery, and when slavery was abolished, you and Congress made Florida give black people citizenship. There were more black people than white people, and so this is when they created this ban on voting. Mm-hmm. And then they started rounding people up immediately. Like, this is immediately in the 1600s, at the beginning of our Florida Constitution. So at the very beginning of our state is when they've been trying to do this, and it was always been about voting and power. And so
it's nothing new then.
It's nothing new. I mean, this is our state. This is America. I mean,
wow. That's real right there.
Absolutely.
State Senator Randolph Bracey is in the studio. He got a bunch of questions to ask him, but he said he can take phone calls too. So 407-369-8555. Jay Scully's in the building. Pine Hills Talk, Pine Hills Partnership. Anything you want to say to the senator?
No, just thank you for taking the time to be here, because I think a lot of times elected officials, for lack of a better word, clout chase, I think they take for granted the fact that you have to meet the people where they are. So I just want to commend you for taking the time to join us here today and join the conversation.
Yes. Yeah. Let's talk about this new Texan law. What do it all entail, the Texan and driving law?
Well, it's a crime now. And so the thing is, I haven't seen it being enforced that much, but it does give an opportunity for police to pull someone over if they see you with your phone. So I would just urge people to be careful. And I have to watch out myself, because, you know, everyone's attached to their phones. And I have had to break that habit. And it's still an ongoing thing. Right. But I would caution people that you can get a ticket for doing it. And so
how much is that ticket?
You know, I don't want to estimate. I think it's like your typical ticket, $200-$300. So.
Yeah. And I think you mentioned. Yeah, that's. Hey, that's a tough one right there.
I don't got it.
Right.
I don't got it.
Right.
I don't
got
to send that message that way.
Right.
Take away.
GPS, though, be messing up.
Yeah, the GPS thing. They don't even take that in consideration.
Well, you know, they should. And so it's really up to the police officer. You know, from what I've heard, they aren't enforcing it that much, but the police officer should know that, you know, there's other things that people do. You got to get your GPS, your directions. But I would still encourage people to do it when you're stopped. You know, don't do it while you're driving. And right, we all tend to do that. Right. But before you start driving, just so you don't give the opportunity for you to be stopped.
There you go.
Yeah.
407-369-8555. You're going to the phone line. Caller, you have a question or comment for State Senator Randolph Bracey?
Yes, I got a question. It has been the law about the Texans. What about the officers that has the computers that's on their dashboard? You know, they be driving and looking at it, texting. And I mean, that's almost the same thing, you know. They got to look at the person's face, who they're looking for, if they on the road and stuff like that. So I kind of think that texting the driving is kind of like, you know what I'm saying, like kind of funny, though. I mean, I understand there being a lot of accidents. They saying that because it's towards accidents. But it'd be a lot of officers on their phone as well. You know what I'm saying? So how they going to really, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Pass that law for the officers as well.
Right. Well, you know, in this sense, I think the officers are immune from this law, and I don't think it's right, but that's the way the law is written.
But is it something that we can do something about, that going against that law too? Like, you know, nation, can it be something like another bill for the officers as well, where it could be where they have to stop if they get on their computers, a laptop,
right?
Or it could be changed. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It
needs
to be changed.
No, they got to stop. If they stop, then that means they can't run your license. I mean, they can't run your before you.
That means we can go back doing the normal. You know what I mean? I guess it's gonna have to be an eye opener to let them understand that it's gonna be a normal, because it has emergency. People that drive has an emergency, So they pick up their phone, they can be like, oh, right. They be like, oh, I'm pregnant, I'm water broken. I mean, you know what I'm saying? My water broke.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And now next thing you picking up the phone, now you getting pulled over. Your lady about to have having this baby. Now you got to explain to the officer, I picked up the phone because my lady, you know what I mean? So it's just
I
too
do.
Much. That's like,
absolutely.
No, this Mr. Flick It Up on the phone line. How you doing, brother?
Oh, you already know me. I come with new questions. I come with new questions.
Oh, man. Thanks for calling in, man.
Hey,
thanks,
I think y'all need to have the sheriff in here, talk to that, talk about that.
Yeah, we will.
You know, because
you don't be trying to pull up, but go ahead. I feel you.
No, I mean, not to pull up, put anybody on the spot, but, I mean, he makes a good point, you know. And so I think he can best answer how his officers will react to emergency situations because that is something that needs to be accounted for.
Wow. So what else happened in the last session that you would like to share with the community?
So I would say Amendment 4 was a big thing. I think that, you know, we had a criminal justice package that I had been working on for years. It was watered down, so it didn't have some of the things I wanted, like, for example, judicial discretion for mandatory minimums. So we have mandatory minimums now for, let's say, for certain drug possession. But I felt that a judge should be able to decide it, instead of, like, immediately 7 years for this amount, 15 years for that amount, because there's always special circumstances in which this may be their first time offense, or, they just got caught, a young person just got caught up with the wrong person, wrong time. And so sometimes a judge can make that appropriate sentence. So there were certain things that weren't in it that I would have liked for it to be in there. But for example, one thing that did pass was, what was that? Sorry, I'm trying to.
That's okay. It's all good.
How did they argue against judges being using their judgment?
It's
that's
like
why they're a judge, no?
Well, I would agree. It's like a it's a tough on crime rhetoric. Like this is how certain people get elected in rural places. You know, we're tough on crime. We lock them up. We have no tolerance for anything, and so. It started, I guess, in the 80s when, the drug boom came. And then you had, Reagan and those were talking about being tough on crime. And so I think a whole group of politicians grew up out of that era. And there's still vestiges of it. Older people that still believe in that, like, lock them up, throw away the key type of thing. Mm-hmm. And like, I don't care what a judge, we don't have any room for judicial discretion. So
they're more pro criminalization than pro justice.
There you go.
I didn't say that though.
Yeah, that's real though.
PA probably said that.
Those are facts. Those are facts. 407-369-8555. If you have a question or comment for State Senator Randolph Bracey, definitely call in. We're gonna go to the phone line. Caller, you're live on 98.5 The Wire. Got a question or comment?
Yes, I do. This is Lawrence Robinson.
Hey, Mr. Robinson.
I have a question about the affordable housing initiative. The Housing for All. I read through that initiative that they started about 2 years ago. And now Mayor Dyer and Mayor Demings are promoting it highly. In that initiative, it says that the major cause for the need of affordable housing is low income. But nowhere in the document, which is about 40 pages long, does it address the issue of low income? So if the document itself and the plan itself is flawed, why are they spending millions of dollars for houses, for affordable housing, that they know is not going to work? It's not going to solve the problem.
Well, I can't really speak to the county and the city's initiative. You know, I know that, I've talked with the mayor and they are trying to raise the sales tax for the purpose of transportation and affordable housing. They have an initiative. I still don't think he's rolled out the specific proposal, but
they are spending millions of dollars right now based on that plan, which is flawed. Do you support the plan?
I haven't seen
this
plan.
It's a state initiative. I'm sorry?
Oh, okay. I'm not familiar with which plan you're talking about. From the state,
Housing for All.
Okay. I'll have to review it.
Okay. I asked that question at a number of town hall meetings, and I got different answers. Buddy Dyer had one of his staff people in a town hall meeting, and they explained the plan. And I asked that question, why is there nobody addressing the issue of low housing? The person who did the presentation said that there is no plan to address that. And just as she said that, State Representative Anna Estimani said that she had a plan. And so later I asked her to show me her plan. She said then she doesn't have it. Well, she never said she didn't have a plan, but she never presented a plan. She came up with all kinds of excuses. About a week or two later, the mayor had another town hall meeting, at least Mayor Demings had another town meeting, county meeting, where they brought someone in to explain the housing initiative. I asked that person, Dr. Manuel, is there a plan to address the low income issue? She said that wasn't an issue. Now, in the plan, I said, that's the main issue. So we know the plan is flawed. Why are we spending all this money? Do you support the mayor and both mayors in this plan? Which actually, there are other counties involved in this plan also. It's flawed, but nobody's talking about the issue that's causing the problem. They're talking about the problem and spending taxpayers' money for nothing.
Mm. Right.
Wow.
Sorry, did you say right?
No, I said, I'm listening to what you're saying. I wasn't at this town hall meeting, but I will say.
There's been several town hall meetings, and it's been written up a lot of times. Even Orlando Sentinel has brought it up, and a couple of other media has brought it up. The plan is flawed badly, but they're still promoting it, and they're still spending taxpayers' money on a plan that they know will never, ever work.
What do you think should happen, Mr. Robertson? You think that...
First, come up with a plan. Come up with a plan. Don't tell me that you got a plan when you don't have a plan. That's the first thing. Don't lie to the people.
There you go. Wow. Thanks for calling, man. We appreciate your passion. That is a very important subject.
Yeah.
It is a very important subject. So I'm glad that you bringing this up, and we appreciate your phone call, okay?
Thanks.
I was at a recent Kaboom built a
playground
over there at Emerald Apartments, and I noted I was talking to the developer that is building like senior homes right behind that, and it's a partnership with the city. They've got state money, they've got federal money. That they all are using to build that along with some of their own money. So developers have to make money on these projects to build it, to get involved, and to make it affordable. And so there are some affordable housing projects that are going on that are in partnership with the city and the county. So as far as the specific details that he's talking about, you know, I don't know, but I do know that there's a need.
It's a huge need.
Yeah.
I wonder what city can we look at and kind of like emulate what they're done, because this seems to be a huge issue here in Orlando.
Mm-hmm.
And the beauty of staying in two states is I get to evaluate what is done right, what is done wrong. And it seems like the government will have to take a better role, because it's not going to come from greedy developers.
Right,
and that's not going to happen. No. That's what's down.
That's
here.
That's what's happening. They trying to get paid. You understand? The government's gonna have to play some kind of role in representing the people.
Well, yeah, and the problem is, I mean, developers have influence with the governmental bodies because they donate. You know,
They donate.
They're the ones that are trying to build these projects, so they write checks, and so. You know, that's how our system works, I disagree with it.
If the Democrats was in charge, do you think we would see a plan that would get pushed through?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I had a tax that would bring in hundreds of millions of dollars for affordable housing projects. That proposal was not accepted in Tallahassee, but we just proposed it last year. That didn't go anywhere. So my colleagues thought it was a new tax, but I mean, we have to look at how we raise revenue to build. I mean, the money has to come from somewhere. So, but I'm always open to new ideas.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that we would definitely take the lead on it if we were in power.
What's the likelihood that the solution does come from Tallahassee, though? Because I think that's the awkward question that we have now, because that's where you do your work.
Right.
Like, is it more something that has to be solved on the community level? Well, not the community level, but the county level, the city level, or can Tallahassee get their act together and address? Because it's a statewide crisis. So
it's a statewide crisis.
You get why you're getting the question, but...
Yeah, I think that the problem is sometimes that it's happening in different pockets of the state. And so, you know, like maybe the rural areas don't have the same growth as the more populated areas. And usually the more populated areas are Democratic strongholds. So sometimes the Republicans may not feel as pressed to do something, mm-hmm. but they're the ones in power. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's going to have to be a convergence of all of these issues coming out at once that push the leadership to do something. But it's coming from like a grassroots level where they're having to pay attention. And so I don't just think it's risen to that level where it's like we have to do something right now. But it's getting there. It's getting very close to that.
State Senator Randolph Bracey is in the studio, 407-369-8555. You got a question or comment for him. What do you want to see happen in your next session? What are you really pushing?
So I have a bill that's garnering a lot of attention, and it is what I call a compensation bill for the descendants of the Ocoee Massacre. A lot of people don't know about it. It happened in 1920.
Nice.
And you know, July Perry is a name that I hope you all will try to remember, but he was lynched in 1920. You had about 500 residents in Ocoee back then. He and a man named Moses Norman went to go vote. At that time, you know, obviously it was frowned upon, but not only that, Moses Norman, July Perry were wealthy individuals. They owned a lot of land,
mm-hmm.
and there was some jealousy because they were so independent and they didn't need the white residents from at that time. And so there was some jealousy. So anyway, a mob ensued. Many black people were killed. The whole town of Ocoee was run out of town. The courts at the time basically redistributed all that land that they owned into the white residents that were left. So wow. You're talking about millions of dollars worth of land that if you were to value it now.
Right.
So anyway, I have a compensation bill that would award the descendants of the Ocoee Massacre $10 million. And so I commissioned a study to look at who would be eligible. How would it be allocated? Would it be in the form of scholarships? And so it's interesting because, I mean, I think there's some national attention being paid to it, attention to it, because of the conversation around reparations
right.
in Congress. And so, but a lot of people don't know something like that happened right here in Ocoee. It's still considered the bloodiest day in American political history in the country because it happened on presidential election day. And so I'm doing a compensation bill, which will be next year, which is the 100th year anniversary of that event. But also we're having a festival to commemorate the life of July Perry and the others that were killed on November 2nd. And so that's something that it's the more I've learned about it, the more I've become passionate about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you look at lynching in America, really in the South, you always hear like these little incidences, like a black man looked at a white woman or what have you. But what really is at the crux of it is land.
Yep, economics. Ownership.
Economics. Hmm. Those folks back then, it was right out of slavery. You had the Reconstruction era, and these folks were owning land. You know, they had farming experience from slavery, and so they were doing well.
Right.
And there was jealousy. The progress that they were making. And so lynching is really it's tied to economics, and that's really what motivated. And so I'm just trying to bring light to that. And when I talk about these compensation bills, these, I don't like to say reparation, but people get uncomfortable with it. Some of my colleagues, but you, I feel like you've got to talk about it, because you're talking about millions of acres of land that was redistributed.
Right.
I mean, and that's really the biggest form of wealth for nothing. So anyway, that's something I'm passionate about.
How likely do you feel that this bill will get passed?
I think it's going to garner a lot of conversation. We haven't had a bill like this in the legislature. So we had something similar 20 years ago, but that was the only like of its kind, Rosewood, and they did a movie about it.
Right.
I think it has some legs, because I've talked to the leadership about it. The Senate president, who's a Republican, he's very interested in it. Mm. You know, he didn't know about it, and a lot of people are intrigued by, you know,
they don't know this.
They don't know it, you know, and so it's like the more they know it, the more they are interested in it. And really, what's interesting is that the state played a part in it, because they were complicit. The state basically funded the mob that went to take July Perry's land, because how they would do it is they would call them home actors. So basically, any citizen, if they felt the need to get involved, they would be considered, you know, a de facto part of the government, and the government would fund it. So
that's crazy.
They were complicit. They were also a part of the whole land takings, and not to mention the generational trauma of something like your parent, your grandchild or something like that, but also the financial impact. So when you look at it from that perspective and you look at the state's role in it, I don't really think there's an argument in how you could say, you know, there's not a debt to be paid. So
shout out to Jesse Allen.
It's just the unspoken that then that'll set precedent. And everywhere else in America, that's happened, which is pretty much the whole America.
No doubt.
They got to come out them trees with some paper.
Oh, man.
407-369-8555. State Senator.
And we want cash.
Yeah. We want cash.
No checks.
No checks. No checks. I don't believe it. Some gold or diamond.
We'll take gold.
I want your opinion on what happened last week. What happened last week here in Orlando with a 6-year-old and an 8-year-old kid been arrested?
Two 6-year-olds. OPD had to come out and clarify that.
Okay, 2 6-year-olds being arrested at a school here in Orlando. Black school, black staff, black police officer.
Public charter,
black kid. What are your thoughts on this whole thing?
I don't know how you could arrest a 6-year-old. I don't know how that can happen. And so I thought our state attorney came out pretty forcefully, and I thought she handled it correctly. I didn't see the press conference from the city. I believe the officer was fired. Did I see
that? Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but I think that, you know, I talked to my staff after that happened. And we're looking at legislation to address, you know, childhood arrest and seeing how we address it. Like, should there be an age limit? And so we're probably going to come out with something.
So there's not an age limit?
Not in Florida.
Should there be an age limit?
I would think that's common sense. Like, you don't arrest.
Right.
But a 6-year-old, but obviously.
Wow.
That's not. So.
Wow. Okay, wow. We got to do our state station ID, WHPBLP 98.5 Pine Hills, Orlando. In the studio, State Representative Randolph Bracey is in the studio. You have worked with Governor DeSantis, right?
Yes.
How is he? Is he as bad as Democrats make him out to be, or is he, no, he is a little better. He's okay.
Well,
Scott? Is he like Scott?
I mean, I don't think you can get much worse than Rick Scott, to be honest. But
shout out to the senator.
Right.
Yeah. So, but I don't know. I mean, I'm just getting to know him. Like, I've only really sat down and talked with him once.
Okay.
And I mean, that's, I'll say it's honestly by design. I'm still kind of in my feelings about the whole Gillum and DeSantis race.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so, you know, obviously I have to deal with him and he has the veto pen, which is very powerful. So like I get projects from this district, just different projects that we're trying to do that need funding that go to his desk, and he can go through each project and say yes, no. And so he vetoed a couple of them in my district. And so, you know, we're getting to know each other, but I think I just would say he's similar to Rick Scott. I mean, I think he's trying to kind of come to the middle. So he closely aligned himself with Trump, but now he's just doing little things that get out into the media that says, you know, I'm not a far right, you know, crazy or whatever. But so, like, I mean, he's what did he do? He legalized a form of cannabis that most Republicans don't necessarily agree with. But I think he's trying to position himself as like, I'm right in the middle of a Democrat and a Republican. So because I think, and the only reason I think he's doing that is because the race was so close that he's scared of a challenge. And so he doesn't want to. He wants to try to get Democratic votes and you know, independents and that type of thing. So
what's the problem with ex-felons? Why is it the Republicans do not believe in redemption?
Because they know that's lights out.
That's what it is. It's very simple. It's a matter of numbers.
It's just a matter of politics.
Remember what I said from the beginning of this, the beginning of the Constitution of this state, the very beginning of government in this state, they did that because they would have lost power if they gave black people their full rights. And so they created laws to give people felons so that they couldn't vote. Yeah. I mean, this started 150 years ago. And think about it. It was never, they never tried to get rid of it at all. Everyone in government was fine that is still the law of the land. Something that started, you know, during slavery. And they had no intention of changing that. And the only reason it happened was because, you know, Desmond Meade and his group just decided enough's enough. And as soon as it happens, they try to invalidate it. So I think it's very clear. I don't even think, I mean, we could say racism and all of that. I just think it's power is it's all about power. You control, you got a $90 billion budget. And so they control where that money goes. They control all the laws in this state. You lose control of that, you're losing power.
How close are the Democrats to actually tilting this thing?
Like in the Senate, there's 23 Republicans to 17. So we're eyeing two seats. You know, hopefully if we win, it'll be 21-19. And they're super scared of that.
What about the House?
The House is very far. They have a super majority, and it's because their map is gerrymandered. You know, it has to be. Mm-hmm. So our Senate map was gerrymandered, and there was a lawsuit that ensued that basically the Senate had to redraw the map until a judge approved it. But that same challenge didn't happen in the House. So the House maps are still gerrymandered. So they have like a 30-something plus seat advantage in the House.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Anything, fellas, before we go? You good? Yeah. Jay?
Clear. When Mayor Gillum was running, I think one of the points that he made is he wasn't afraid to go into some of these rural areas where they probably weren't used to seeing a Democrat. Mm-hmm. I guess you're not used to seeing a black man that speaking directly to you. Right. Does the Florida Democrats, to fix their track record, they don't, I want to be careful with how I say this. What playbook? How do they need to change the playbook in order to come into play? Because you can't have. My whole life, like, I've never seen a Democratic governor. I've never seen Democrats actually running the state of Florida.
Right.
So what is gonna change come next cycle? Because this is starting to get old.
I agree. But I think there's room for hope. I mean, he came closer than any Democrat in the last 25 years. I mean, so, you know, I don't like to lose, but he came close. And so instead of, I don't know if the key is to go in, you know, the rural areas and try to get Republican votes, or do we try to motivate the Democrats that we already have? Because we outnumber Republicans by a huge number. And I don't mean to assume that anyone is Republican or Democrat here, but my point is that there were the votes to get him elected. And so there's still a large number of people that just don't vote. And so if we can find a way to motivate the folks that will be affected by a governor's leadership, then he could have won. And so I still don't think we activated some of those folks, but there's still more that we can activate. And so I think that's the key. Instead of trying to go into rural votes and try to switch, you know, and not to say that all rural voters vote with Trump or the Republican Party, but I'm just saying to go and try to get Republicans to switch, I think the key is to motivate our people in masses to just go out and put our people in office.
Right. There's a little beef between Gillum and this Attorney Morgan.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I don't know if I'm
it's on site. Out of that.
Yeah. It's on site out there.
It's on site, man. Like, wow. Because Gillum might run again. I mean, that's a possibility. Never know.
It is. I mean, he's got the name recognition now.
And he telling you better not run.
I know. It's a threat.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, a little rap battle going on. Yeah, man. Yeah.
All that I know is I haven't seen a Bracey lose. So keep doing what you're doing because it's working apparently.
Right. And you were a track star, right?
Play basketball. Yeah.
And what college you went to?
I went to William and Mary in Virginia. Got a basketball scholarship.
Okay.
Went to DP.
You and
Ooh.
Okay. You and got to own this building. Yeah, that's good, man. That's good. Yeah. What made you get into politics?
You know, my mother ran for office. You know, I came out of college and I was going to different teams trying to play ball. And so I would have these periods where I was just home waiting, just playing ball. And my mom was like, I'm running for office. I need you to work on my campaign. And so I did it reluctantly, but I really enjoyed it. It was competitive. And I really got into it. And she lost. But from there, I just was hooked. You know, I worked on someone else's campaign and another campaign after that. And so I just got involved. And when there was a seat open in 2012, that's when I decided to jump in and run.
Wow. Yeah. Now, you played ball overseas?
I did, in Turkey.
In Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
Professional ball in Turkey?
Yes.
What was that like?
Well, you don't know anybody that speaks English. Okay. So a lot of time alone, you know, a lot of time
to read.
Yeah, just not, TV's not in English, just you're just chilling there. So a lot of playing ball at the courts, and then I'd go to these internet cafes just to get on the internet at that time to just communicate with people at home. But it's, you know, if you don't have a family with you, it gets kind of lonely.
So how long did you play over there?
Not long. I came back, and I started to play in leagues here, like the minor leagues. They had the CBA back then and NBDL. And so I did that for a couple years, just trying to get to the league. And then it was like, you know, got to get a job, you know, chasing that dream. But
wow. One last question before we go. We always ask our guest this question. Ty here going to hit you up with this one. This is an easy one, though.
Yeah, it's going to be an easy question. And I know you got it.
Yeah.
Five top rappers dead or alive.
Oh, wow.
Your top five. No pressure.
Okay.
No judgment.
It could be Republicans, too.
Yeah. I'm going with Jay.
There might be a little judgment.
How do we know who's...
Hang on a second.
I just said that. You know, I just threw it out there. And then
you
said
Jay. No, he meant Jay-Z.
Yeah, Jay. I know. Okay.
Is Jay Republican?
You asking me?
Look, he's
Black Republican. He had a song called Black Republican.
Yeah, him and Nas.
Right. Yeah.
They getting money. Them boys Republican.
Yeah, they rich.
Yeah.
That's all I know. All
right.
Now, Jay is number one, without a doubt. To me, that's not even questionable. I would say, Big, maybe. I don't know. That's kind of typical. I mean, to me, Jay is definitely number one. Big.
Yeah, it's your list.
It's your list.
Yeah. I mean, people hate on, like, I mean, I'm going to throw him in there. Uh-oh. And people going to hate.
Oh, man.
I really like Drake. I mean, I think he got flow.
Yeah.
I think he got flow. I don't know if he's, I'm not saying he's number two.
Okay.
But he's just one of my favorite rappers.
Top people, two, but I'm not two. And I got one.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so I think he's up there. And then I would just put, You know, before Kanye started just acting up.
Right. What happened?
I really used to like Kanye. And I mean, I saw some stuff recently where he had like this whole gospel vibe going.
Yeah, yeah, he doing
I like that vibe that he's on. So if he can ever get back to the old Kanye.
Yeah.
Okay. He's up there.
Yeah, one more.
Yeah. And then I'd say he rounded out with Big and Pac. I mean, not like M back when Eminem when he was.
Woo!
He ain't my favorite. But I
like that one. I'm down with Eminem.
He's not my favorite. No, I respect his lyrical flow.
But I'm telling you, Tyler.
He's not.
You know, he read the dictionary.
No,
but then these young rappers J. Cole's dope.
J. Cole.
Okay. All right.
I mean, they're not. I'm just start talking now.
Right. He did his five.
Yeah. I'm going old school with top five, but I got respect for these young cats.
Now, there you go. Our state senator, listen to hip hop.
For sure.
That's what's happening, man. And we ran into him at the Spoken Words event. Downtown.
Right.
And you do Spoken Words.
I do.
You got anything you want to leave us with before we go? I can stop the music.
Go ahead and bless us.
Dude, I'm not ready. I'm really not.
You don't have anything? It's all cussing, right?
Yo, Senator Bracey cousin is wild. That's a wild thought.
A PK.
Right. All that you dealing with in Tallahassee, I know y'all be cussing.
It'll get to you.
Usually we let the guests do a shout out before they go, but can I do a shout out?
For sure.
Because I mentioned earlier that the DeBraceys don't lose, and I love your family so much because y'all are all involved, but it's not just politics. Like, shout out to your sister. Right. Whenever I see your sister, I know I'm in the right place. She's over at the Dr. Phillips Center, helping represent us there, your father, your mother, all that. Yes. So I'm really glad that you brought up the topic of apathy and addressing apathy. You seem to have a knack for beating apathy, so... Do you have a word just how we can get more of us involved, more of us realizing like there's still hope, there's still okay to have hope, and it's still okay to be involved?
That's a great question. I think one of the keys, one of the reasons why I was so proud of Andrew is that I felt like he spoke to us as people of color. He represented our interests. I think that's one of the reasons for apathy. Like, you know, for example, I had this conversation with my dad about like the presidential election and like Joe Biden, like, and like his generation is just like, we going with Joe because he's the safest candidate. But like the younger generation, I think, is looking like he don't speak to me, you know, younger.
Right.
And he stay losing.
Right. He hasn't really.
Forgetting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
I want that universal health care.
Okay.
I think we need somebody that really represents us, but also, I don't know, like I've been toying with this idea of having these I'm just kicking it around, like concert series, like leading up to the 2020, to, you know, bring people in, get people engaged with like music and art, but also bringing in politics and that, you know, and just kind of talking about it our way. Mm-hmm. And like, because, you know, sometimes you see stuff on CNN, it's like, yeah, these issues are important, but they aren't touching my everyday life or whatever. And so I've been toying around with ideas on how to get more young people engaged. And so I look out for something, I think, in 2020. I think this festival got me on this, like, I'm just doing more events, you know. I want to go outside our county and just start doing stuff. And so I talked to some folks about raising money for this concert series just to get people engaged, and we continue to just talk about, you know, like a vote or die campaign, you know what I mean, that Diddy's doing.
Right.
Like he started, like, I want to do a vote or die Florida, like just get everybody involved. So
the way you talking, you might mess around and end up governor.
Yeah, it's sounding major over there.
Keep us tapped in.
Yeah, don't forget about us, man. Yeah. Do you? No. Before we go, I'm gonna give you a chance. Do you got anything you want? You got anything? You got a freestyle?
I make music. I really make music. To be honest, like what I really want to do when I'm gonna come back and like give y'all a song that I want y'all to just play, and I'll do it like that.
Okay.
So you like my stuff being polished.
Oh, okay, you know? All right.
I can't come over here and spit, and the people be talking that my spit game is whack. So.
There you go.
Oh, smart man. He's real, man.
Absolutely.
They don't get no real in that tie here.
Absolutely.
They're the kind of cats we won't represent.
Right,
us.
Right.
Randolph Bracey. Don't lose, man.
Yeah, you the real. Thank don't you for talking about it. Thank you so much.
Thank y'all for having me.
All right, family. There you go. State Senator Randolph Bracey going back to more music. Afternoon Jams 98.5.